Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The news out of Ukraine, still a little scary this morning. Only one power line to that state-owned nuclear power complex is operational. Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine, how close are you to that area, Joseph, and just how dangerous is the situation right now?
Bob, good afternoon from Ukraine. Right now, I'm quite far. That's on the other side of the country. I'm still in the west. I spoke to you all from right across the river from that plant, the Zaporizhia nuclear power station. And you can see, because that's where you can see the Russian occupied land from the city of Nikopol. And so I'm still in touch with many friends I met during my few weeks of reporting from Nikopol. And they're extremely scared. In fact, every morning on their Telegram channel, the mayor announces how many times Russian rockets hit the city. And yesterday was 120. 120 rockets hit this pretty small city, maybe 80,000 people. And they also tell you what the nuclear levels are. And currently everything is stable. But the Russians did destroy some of the monitors. And we know this from the Ukrainian company that runs the plant. They still have scientists and operatives in the plant. They've been held hostage for months now. And the company that manages the plant, Inerholdar, said that they're losing their ability to monitor what's happening there. And then we had this very extremely scary statement from a Russian general, Valery Vasilyev. He commands the garrison now, that's the Russian garrison that has taken over this power plant. And I think they wanted the world to hear this. He told his soldiers that there will either be Russian land or a scorched desert. And then he said, as you know, we have mined all the important facilities of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, and we are not hiding it from the enemy. We've warned them. The enemy knows that the station will be either Russian or no one's. We are prepared for the consequences of this step. And then he addresses his soldiers and says, you must understand that we have no other choice. And if the toughest order comes, we must fulfill it with honor. And surely the Russians are using this to scare the world.
Is there any diplomatic talk at all these days?
Between Ukraine and Russia, no. And as we saw with the grain export deal that was facilitated by the United Nations and Turkey, Ukraine will not sign a deal with Russia because they don't trust them. And so even that deal, Ukrainians signed a document with the UN and Turkey, and the Russians signed a separate one. Now the United Nations and the International Atomic Energy Agency, are very concerned about this, and they're trying to intervene. But obviously the Russians, their only goal is to win, and they want to use the best chips they have. And there's a reason why they took this power plant. And they know that, Ukrainians cannot fire back in that direction because they know Ukrainians don't want a nuclear disaster. And I think there still is a lot of questions as to, it's not so simple that, and there's a lot of debate about this, but if you just were to blow up the plant, it would not necessarily cause some huge disaster. There's a lot of different things that would have to happen. And I think there's a lot of confusion and fear about what actually could happen. I don't think anyone really knows.
Yeah, there have been reports citing that Fukushima plant, the reactor that overheated in 2011, they had that tsunami, and the backup power supply failed, and that's when the problem started. So when you're hearing about only one power line to that Ukraine nuclear power company operational, it does get a little frightening.
It's terrifying, and I think this is why the Ukrainians call the Russians terrorists, and this is, they want to hold the world hostage in order to get what they want, and hold it. This is the largest nuclear power plant in Europe, so it's in a sense that they have a pretty strong card to play here, and this is it's the same issue with the fact that Russia has nuclear weapons. It scares NATO from getting completely involved, but yet it lets Russia continue to do things like this. This plant is well within the borders of Ukraine, but because Russians were allowed to get so far, what would they do next? And there's three other nuclear plants in Ukraine, one's in the center and two in the west that still operate. That does not include Chernobyl. And so just imagine if they conquered more territory, how much more terror they could inflict. on the in all of Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. On a lighter note, we have kidded reporter Joseph Lindsley about being the world's most interesting man because of his various exploits before this one in Ukraine. We alluded to you being at the home of Chuck Norris and not having anything to eat. First of all, what were you doing there? Explain what happened.
Well, and I could say one relevance of this story to Ukraine is that when we were delivering supplies to soldiers in the front lines in Donetsk, I wanted to give them a good story and a good laugh. And so I told this, I tried to tell it in Ukrainian. I told the story not long ago to soldiers to boost their spirits. But it was when I was working for Roger Ailes, the chairman and founder of Fox News. And I think the story highlights some of the absurdity of American political life, an absurdity that's such a contrast to the situation we're in now. George and Barbara Bush had invited Roger, who had helped get George H.W. Bush elected, to Texas. And Chuck Norris heard we were coming down there, so he invited the chairman of Fox News and his wife and their kid and me, because I was his close advisor, to the Chuck Norris Ranch. And I'm sure you've heard the Chuck Norris facts, right? All these made-up things about how he's some kind of mythological, all-powerful figure. Like, there's no street called Chuck Norris because you can't cross Chuck Norris and live. So it was kind of like going to visit some kind of Santa Claus, like this unreal character. And very important to note is, Roger Ailes was a rather large guy, like Orson Welles. When I was working on Sixth Avenue at Fox, we had an executive chef and we ate all day. We had like two breakfasts, and there was a secret Danish closet. And I was starting to look like that too. And so food was very important. So we arrive early morning at the Norris Ranch, which is a surreal experience. And, it's custom, especially in Texas and, say, also in Ukraine. You arrive at someone's house, there's hospitality, there's food. There's nothing, just unsweetened iced tea for hours. And now it's about 1 o'clock. We haven't had, we're accustomed to having a lot of food. We'd had nothing. And we go fishing. And I guess, you're supposed to catch your own food at Chuck Norris's house. No one caught anything. And then it was like sort of afternoon of delirium because we were so hungry. Roger was really out of sorts. He's not used to not being in control. And we went horseback riding, but only I and then Ailes' kid could actually get on the horses. And Chuck, Mr. Norris, says, I can tell this story now because I'm in a war zone. I don't know. I don't feel like Chuck Norris could come after me. But he said, whatever you do, do not say the name of the president of the United States to my horse. Okay, I said, okay, Mr. Norris, I never was going to. It was President Obama at the time. It was very strange. But Roger Ailes' kid says Obama to the horse, and the horse goes nuts and throws the kid off, and the kid's flying through the air. It was terrifying, but also hilarious in retrospect. And he survived. And meanwhile, we had no food, and this continued. Finally, it was about 8 o'clock that night, and Roger Ailes' wife said to Mrs. Norris, "Like, are we gonna have some food? I mean, we're stuck in this 2,000-acre ranch." Roger and I were joking, like, do we know how to kill a chicken? And finally, this little like barbecue shows up, carry out, and then all these people came into the kitchen, like ranch hands and nannies, and so we had to share this tiny meal. And so next thing I know, I'm sleeping two rooms down from Chuck. I can't sleep. I'm so hungry. So I wake up about 6 a.m. And this is just so bizarre. And I go downstairs, and Roger Ailes and his wife are downstairs. And Roger looks stricken, like he's been through some kind of war. And he said, sneak in the kitchen. We already did. And get some food. And he promised me they would keep watch. So now I'm sneaking around Chuck Norris's kitchen. I'm half laughing and half terrified because maybe the Chuck Norris facts are true. I'm starting to believe all this. Anyway, I find a pantry. I pour a bowl of cereal. I put the spoon in, and I hear someone coming down the steps. And I freeze. And I just imagine Chuck Norris's lethal feet kicking me into Mexico or into some other century. And it was his wife. And she sees me eating, and she just stares at me. And she walks into the living room, which is covered in guns, and I thought that was going to be the end. I was able to eat the bowl of cereal, and we spent the next 6 hours talking about the person that Mr. Norris wanted to become the next president, because Roger, had some power in that department. And then our driver picked us up, and Roger, still in a panic, called the captain of his plane and said, "We need 6 meatball sandwiches from Subway." And so, but as I was telling the story to the soldiers, and we're in a camp, you know, and you can hear the Russian bombardment at the edge. I had better hospitality, you know, in the Ukrainian soldiers' camp than I did in the house.
Mr. Chuck Norris. So being at Chuck Norris's house prepared you for covering the war in Ukraine. That's another chapter. You got to write the book, Joseph Lindsley. We'll talk tomorrow. Stay safe. Thank you. We enjoyed that.